Welcome to Configure It Done, the podcast where SAP leaders share real insights, proven strategies, and stories from front lines of major SAP transformations. Get inspired, get informed, let's get it done.
Hello, and welcome to the Configure It Done podcast. Today, I am with Bernie Ricciopoli, who has recently finished up as the head of people technology over at Coles and is now in the market looking for a new role. So we thought that this would be a great opportunity for her to talk about herself, her background, her experience, and what is fantastic about Bernie, basically.
So, yeah, thanks.
Hi, welcome.
How are you going?
Yeah, good. Good, thank you. Just getting used to this new system and all this technology. So it's been a bit of a journey to get here.
Oh, it has. And hello to all the listeners as well. It's great to meet you all and glad you've tuned in.
Yes, exactly. So let's hear a little bit about you then, Bernie. So as I said, you've just recently finished up at Coles, where you're in the head of people technology role. Give us a little bit of background about Bernie and your career.
Yeah, definitely. So I've spent the last 24 years working with the best companies in Australia. So that started at ANZ, primarily doing HR policy procedures. And that's where I got my first taste of doing a HRIS implementation. So I was an SME on the transition from Ansplay, which was a green and black payroll system, onto Oracle PeopleSoft. So that was my first taste in a corporate environment. Sort of since then, I've built up my HR generalist knowledge. And look, the last 10 years, I've really seen how really good process, technology and enabling systems has enabled and helped organisations grow and do things more efficiently.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you say that you initially started your career in the actual HR side and then you got the exposure to the HRIS implementation. We often find that that's how a lot of people get into it. You don't grow up going, you know, I want to get into SAP or HR implementations when I grow up. You just kind of fall into it. So it's naturally sort of natural occurrence, and that's happened for you as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I think what's stayed the same is that I've always had a passion for how people come to work and experience their work day. So whilst that did start in sort of some great HR practices and building great cultures and great teams, it then progressed on to, you know, as the world of work got more complex, was how do you take out that complexity? And a lot of the ways that you can do that is with really good frictionless processes and enabling technology that lets people get on with their workday.
Yeah, of course. It's interesting. I mean, payroll and workday and sort of getting stuff done is the most important part of it, right? We work to get paid. Whoever says they don't is lying.
Look, and a lot of the critical experiences for people is really on their first day of work. That really provides a great first impression to a candidate or a new employee. And that's the most important things that employees cite that really stays with them was how was I welcomed on my first day? You know, was I stuffing around with my computer? Was I trying to get login? Was I able to get into my induction? So really that first impression of a company is really critical, and that's done through the HRIS system for our large companies.
Yeah, it's so good to hear you say that because we often hear of candidates who have joined organisations and, you know, their first few weeks are just a mess of back and forth and trying to get logins and trying to get access to the system, and they're being paid to basically, you know, sit there twiddling their thumbs. So yeah, it's good to hear that that's an important thing for you. So. What about sort of moving forward, you said? So you started off at ANZ, then where did you go after that?
Yeah, so I spent some time at ACCC and also Open Universities Australia. And then post that, went back into Australia Post and then a few years at Energy. So spent a bit of time at AusNet and Hydro Tasmania, building up the capabilities there. And partnering with the businesses to help deliver on their growth strategy, sort of in a change in external environments. With digital coming in, and then most recently at Coles. So that has been a fantastic experience, being able to really level up and in working environment where you're delivering improvements and efficiencies at scale.
Of course, yeah, of course. And then what about the success factors side of things? So obviously this is an SAP podcast.
Yes.
So yep. Just in regards to success factors, like how many times have you worked in it? What insights can you give into it?
Yeah, I'd say for the last 15 years, I've really worked on the SAP Success Factors suite. So that's gone from everything to SAP business client at the back end and working through that. A lot of companies are still sort of on that business client product, and then also working with success factors, so everything from EC, ECP, all of the talent modules and all of the extensibility and partners that are available through that suite of products. Yeah, so I've had a range of experiences from doing just single one-off modules, which actually used to take quite a long time to implement. But now most recently, sort of in the last couple of implementations I've done, sort of the time to get that out to employees and the value that that can deliver really quickly for businesses has shortened a lot. So the last implementation that I would have done, which was at AusNet, that took 9 months to complete.
Wow.
Yeah.
9 months. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. What modules was that?
So that was EC and all of the talent modules and the timesheeting,
right.
So time and attendance.
9 months is very impressive. I've heard some varying stories of very long implementations. So what do you think was the secret to getting that done in 9 months?
Look, there was a couple of things. It's choosing a really good vendor or provider to partner with that has some of that capability to do that. And, you know, they've already got the experience of working with other organisations. So in terms of their process around plug and play to get business requirements sorted really early, it really helps when you're on the business side to then validate those business rules, make sure all the stakeholders are informed, that the communications and change is all sorted. So definitely having clarity on who's doing what, who's accountable, and then what value each of you can provide within your space is really important. Saying that as well, having the capability of the in-house team and SMEs that are dedicated to a project really helps as well. So doing things off the side of your desk, if you're in HR and a payroll team, that can be really challenging because you are pulled into the day-to-day operations of the business for your core role. And as we know with payroll, there's things that need to be checked and executed either on a weekly, fortnightly or monthly basis. So definitely having some dedicated resources that know the business is really important in that process.
Of course.
You know, of course, sticking to time and budget as well. So making sure you're onto that really early and managing that very closely at the front end just ensures that there's no slippage all the way through.
Yeah. The most successful implementations we've ever heard of are exactly what you were just saying there, where you have somebody sitting on the business side, keeping the SI honest, and that is their total job, not having to go and run the payroll in the background as well. So yeah, no wonder you guys were successful there. Yeah. So what was the most challenging implementation you've ever worked on then?
Oh, I think it would be coming in halfway through or at the end after something's been implemented or hasn't been fully implemented for a range of reasons where the business hasn't got the full benefit out of their investment. So I would say the business confidence then in the product or solution or how it was done, that's quite eroded. So in order to build trust back into the business, if you're going in to sort of fix some things, it's hard to then get them all excited about, you know, what's coming in. So to actually then go in, build a different type of stakeholder approach and plan after that initial implementation can be quite challenging. So in that case, it's really important to listen to the stakeholders' experience, understand what worked and what didn't work for that business, and then set some really clear goals, some timeframes on where the opportunities might lie in order to improve what the initial implementation may not have achieved. Oh, look, and we all go into these implementations thinking we know the requirements at the time and we go on what we know. But as we go along, you know, requirements will change and flex once the business knows more. But sometimes those are already locked in. So it's very difficult to change in that instance. So, you know, I'd say a lesson learned from that and something that the team did at AusNet is we actually had a 4-week window after implementation to put in another 20 enhancements that we might have missed throughout the process. So, you know, that's something that I definitely recommend businesses to consider is rather than sort of wrap up on sort of launch date or at the end of hypercare to say, what did people like and didn't like? Was that working? Is that a constraint of the product? Is it a business process? You know, what are our 10 to 20 most important things as an organization, which is actually still quite a lot to tackle. But, you know, what are those things that we do need to fix that will actually say, look, it's gone live, we've listened, we've gone in and fixed those most important things and this is what we've done about it. But, yeah, definitely have been in organisations where, you know, it's post 6 months or 12 months of implementation There hasn't been a good governance model in place. Things have slipped for a range of reasons. Sometimes business requirements change as well. So then it's sort of looking at, you know, how do we set up some good governance and process that's fit for purpose for the company to be able to rectify that.
So do you think that whilst the implementation side of it's really important, obviously, what would you say then is the most important part post-implementation from your experience?
Coles is a great example of how they've built a great governance model with technology and the people and culture teams to actually work in partnership together, where both of the wisdom of those teams are used to say, hey, on a technical side, these are some of the things that we could do to stabilise the system and make sure that everything's still running well to reduce any incidents and sort of the health sort of as the new enhancements and products come in. Likewise, on the business side, they're very close PNC to the business around what do team members need. Maybe rosters have changed or there's a new leave type coming in. You've got super payday coming up. So using their expertise as well when new requirements are required to come in and work together to do that. So Coles runs on a monthly release cycle to make sure all of that continuous improvement is maintained. But also that there's a governance process in place, so all stakeholders signed off are informed and employees are aware of changes as well. So just having that continual cycle of change is something that works really well in such a large environment.
And how would you recommend somebody, perhaps if that would be new to them, how would you recommend that they go about like really locking down the change?
Yes, I definitely think it's to ensure that there's a stakeholder plan, either post-implementation or wherever you're at in the journey, because sometimes organisations will say, oh, things aren't working and, you know, we need to fix things when they're sort of 3 or 4 years in. Or in AusNet's case, you know, they're running business client for quite a while. That was a very aging system. So, you know, we're talking a decade or more, but, you know, there was a lot of things that would pop up within that system because it was aging. You know, we're talking about legacy items that, you know, aren't always keeping up with the pace of change externally. Look, and in those situations, you can still put together some great governance frameworks, but it's always going back to what's the problem to solve? Where is the issue? Do we want to invest in this or not? And what's that remediation piece look like? So, you know, in the case of AusNet and doing all of the business client items, it was, you know, how's the data flowing through? So that was a major pain point for managers were to wait for the data and the jobs to come through from SAP into the recruiting module in SuccessFactors, which would then activate a new position and a recruiting number. So a requisition could be made. So that time lapse for those, for that data to come across was a major pain point. So that's where sort of I led that focus area on, okay, well, how can we then reduce that waiting time, which is waste if you look at it from a lean management perspective, to make sure as soon as managers put it in, we can make it more real time. Even though it wasn't real time, we still had to sort of run some jobs to make that happen. You know, there's still things that you can actually do by knowing the technology, how it works. So it's really important to get a good sense of current state.
So what would you say is more important than the technology side of things, getting that all whipped into shape, or the people side?
I think it's a bit of both. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, staying curious and knowing what the business needs and staying close to the business. So I definitely think that dialogue and that hunger to want to see how to make things better for employees at the end of the day is really important. Mm. The technology is the technology. I guess it will all function in a certain way, but I think it's really knowing how it works. And for me, I don't have a technology background, so it is building good relationships with the people that do know how it's work and what some of the possibilities, and also what are some of the risks and benefits of making the change. Sometimes you will get requests and you do need to test them just to see, you know, is this going to add value to the business? If I do reconfigure something on a permanent basis, is that likely to change or not? Will it be changing again in the future? So it's really important to run it through a value assessment to be able to help then the business understand what the implications of a change would be.
You're right. I suppose technology is technology. It has its certain limitations, whereas people are nuanced, right?
Yes.
They're complicated and have things going on in the background.
Yeah. Although sometimes there are gremlins in different systems. You think, I do not know how that happened. So
Someone will though, right? Someone will. You've just got to find the right person to ask. It's the same as a recruiter, you know, we're obviously not technical ourselves, but we can ask anybody and everybody, and someone loves to talk about what they do, right? So I would imagine it's the same in HR tech. Yeah.
I do.
So where do you see the future of HR technology going then? Obviously, the world is changing exponentially. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like for my son when he's in the workforce. But where do you see the future of HR tech going in the sort of, I don't know, let's say the next decade?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of acquisition with the big players in the market. So I think organizations will make the choice around whether they go with one suite and use sort of some of those partners to be able to do that. That's very powerful when you're looking at data and AI, and then how you might want to integrate that with the rest of any type of technology you're using, say in finance. But I think my utopia is that there's an integrated business system. So, you know, you won't get different budget numbers in finance that you do in HR and all of the rest of the enterprise systems with procurement and all of that type of thing. So, look, I see the future in all those key business metrics coming together. So whether that's in a number of platforms that are in sort of under one sort of brand, whether that's in different platforms, definitely I think that future is around integration, AI, and the data flows to do that. So technology infrastructure that will become increasingly important for businesses as they look to level up what they need to do with their data.
I'm often really surprised by the amount of organisations that I speak to. And you're right, you know, their finance team don't speak to their procurement team and their HR team don't speak to the procurement team. And when you're trying to get something through SuccessFactors or something through Fieldglass, you know, it's, well, no, speak to this person, speak to this person. And you're sort of going around and around in circles. And I think, well, it's 2025. Surely there's got to be some system that will do that for us.
Yes. So, I mean, as you know, like I've worked in HR and technology, I've worked within business and project teams. So being able to transverse those different functional areas and see things from different perspectives gives you a really good empathy around what different roles experience in terms of technology, where they need to build capability. But then at the end of the day, it's how to make it really easy for people so it shouldn't need to be complicated. So a lot of what I do is take that complexity out of businesses so they can really get on with what they need to do in the day.
Yeah, of course. All right. And what about sort of you and where you want to go next? So you're saying about the business and the integration and all of that, but what about you? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Look, it's definitely being able to help organizations improve efficiency, productivity, and employee experience. I think sort of once you nail sort of some great processes, good governance, but also create some really great experiences that matter to employees, that's what's really important to me. So definitely managing programs of work where that change is occurring. So, you know, at that intersection of culture, people and technology, that's where we'll really see a level up. We're already sort of seeing a lot of talk in the market around AI agents and people collaboration. So how do you actually blend those two together to get some great outcomes? So I think that's true of even people technology. You know, hopefully there'll be some voice activated technology that's coming in shortly where you can just say, hey, I want to book my leave near Australia Day. You know, you don't need to know the date or anything like that. It can just go off and do that and then sort of suggest that next best action with agentic AI. So that's the space that I'm really excited to help organizations lean into a bit more and make those investment and prioritization decisions. So not all organizations can make investments in people technology continuously. So it's really looking at what's going to add the most value and impact and what matters most to their business and employees with those investments.
So coming in at that kind of advisory level, really sort of helping organizations understand what is next and how you can add value to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because as I've said, you know, I've worked with the best organisations in Australia, industries in energy, retail, logistics. They're just amazing organisations that have been at the forefront of some of this stuff. But then also they've made really smart decisions about where they go and invest that money in.
Yeah. How do you think it's going to be? This is a question actually that's just come to mind. How do you think people are going to go with the term AI fatigue, which I sometimes feel like I'm experiencing, you know, when I go on, you're saying about this voice activated wanting to put in your leave. Sometimes I just want to do it the old school way and I want to be able just to sort of say, oh, look, can I put this leave in? I don't want to have to speak to a bot or something. How do you think people are going to deal with that as the world progresses?
Yeah, I think it's like in the consumer environment. So when omnichannel marketing had come in and, you know, when you call a call center to say, look, I want to get a new insurance quote, it's actually providing employees a range of options to be able to do that. So that might be through an AI chatbot. It might be through a person. It still might be through a call center. It might be looking up something on self-service. I think some of my work in particularly the process redesign space, you just hope people don't really need to do an action at all. Hopefully down the track, someone will be saying to you, hey, I noticed you took last Christmas off, will you be taking it again? So it's really that proactive nature where the AI might know what your preferences and habits are, that they can actually go and do that for you. But yeah, I definitely think there's a lot of AI fatigue out there, and it's definitely come at the forefront, but it's been around for so long. It's been embedded in all of what we do. So I think in order to reduce that fatigue, you just sort of hope it's invisible. And it just makes things...
I think it'll be interesting as the generations go through the workforce as well, right? Like our generation, you know, I still like to call someone and speak to someone. I'm a bit old school in that sense. I like to have a conversation, whereas I'm sure my son won't even know how to pick up a phone. It'll all be done online. Yeah. So,
you know, in marketing, there's, you know, high involvement purchases where you might want to talk to someone and reason... and see that out. And as AI gets more developed in all of the reasoning and agentic capabilities, it might actually really feel like that natural feeling of speaking to a person. So it's how it's best able to mimic that. But look, I think on that sort of low value, low commitment type of purchase or transaction, sort of that's something that, you know, could be quite easy. And
easily done.
Yeah. You'll get rewarded for then using it. So I think it'll come with use and have it definitely borrowing. Wonderful. I think, you know, some of those principles from a commercial and a customer lens will sort of have sort of that internal HR people experience of AI as well that generally would lag behind sort of a consumer experience.
I suppose whatever makes things easier for people, right? When they're trying to do their day job, and then this is something else that they have to do on the side. So
Yeah,
awesome. All righty. Well, look, thank you ever so much, Bernie. It's been exciting to hear your insights in regards to change management, government, where tech's going to go, and sort of a little bit about your background and your experience as well. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, but thanks, Abby, for having me. And thanks for the listeners for tuning in.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. And watch out where Bernie goes next. All righty. Thanks, Bernie. Bye.